Thank you for listening to We Have Ways of Making You Talk. Sign up to our Patreon to receive bonus content, live streams, and our weekly newsletter with money off books and museum visits as well, plus early access to all live show tickets. That's patreon.com/wehaveways.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Action stations, all hands on deck. Welcome to We Have Ways of Making You Talk. Avril on deck. Welcome to We Have Ways of Making You Talk with me, Al Murray, James Holland, for part two of, we think, three of the Convoy JW55B. We wish, just as you did, that it had a snappier title. The events of Boxing Day 1943.
So just back into 1943.
Well, you know, if you want the scene set for 1944, you've got to say what happened in 1943. It's not difficult to get your heads around. So basically, we think in the first episode there, we set the scene of what the Arctic convoys are, the necessities of them, the intricacies of battleship commissioning in between the wars, the
nomenclature of the Scharnhorst.
Exactly. The restrictions of the Versailles Treaty, the Admiralty's understandable twitchiness about a ship like the Scharnhorst bristling with armory and arms and absolutely bristling, and the constrictions of this part of the world that in the summer offer the opportunity to the defender in terms of all round daylight, and in the winter, the middle of the winter, probably favour the defenders of the convoy. So
we're in the Arctic,
and this is where these particular waters. Convoy JW55B is meant to leave on the 19th of December, but the weather's too bad because it's a bad winter in 1943, isn't it, Jim?
Awful, just one of the worst.
The senior officers of the escort, they hold a conference at Loch Hue on the 20th of December. Five ships.
It's a through escort. I mean, this is just worth very, very briefly just mentioning. So when we were doing Convoy HX231, there were six escorts, and they got a support group kind of sort of after it was too late, but not quite. This, you've got through escorts, which is two destroyers, three corvettes going all the way through. Then you have a fighting destroyer escort as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Of eight destroyers, which is the 36th Destroyer Division. Then you've got Force One, which is the 10th Cruiser Squadron of HMS Belfast. Hooray, big fans of HMS Belfast. HMS Norfolk, HMS Sheffield. HMS Belfast is the flag of the 10th Cruiser Squadron, and that is commanded by Vice Admiral R.L. Burnett. So he is the 10th Cruiser Squadron / Force One commander, whereas Captain Parham is the actual captain of the Belfast. Then you also have Force 2, which is commanded by the CNC himself of the Home Fleet, which this point is no longer Tovey. This is Admiral Sir Bruce Fraser,
who
is
an absolute
total legend.
Well, I think it says something of quite clearly that he and the Navy think, right, this is the chance that we're going to grasp the nettle now. The conditions favour us for doing something about the German battleship threat or not get into it, battlecruiser threat in the Arctic Circle. And the fact that he's aboard, I think he's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely amazing. And the Duke of York is a battleship. Make no mistake, there's no issues over nomenclature on this one. It is a battleship. Supported by HMS Jamaica, which is a serious big old cruiser. And then you've got four destroyers as well, S-class destroyers, Sommerez, Savage, Scorpion, and Stord. So all that for 19 vessels. Now, so you think it's six vessels, escort vessels for convoy HX231, of which only one was a destroyer. And you've got all this. You've got local escort, which is, that doesn't really count. You've got the through escort of two destroyers, two corvettes and one minesweeper, the fighting destroyer escort them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely huge, the amount of support vessels for this.
This is going to make me ask. And come 1944, discussions 1944, we will talk about a big week. Is there an element here? Royal Navy are thinking, right, okay, we're going to bring you out. Is this, this convoy has to happen anyway. It's part of the convoy system. Is this an attempt? Is the convoy bait, is what I'm asking, for the Scharnhorst?
Yes, I think it is. And I think and Bruce Fraser, the Commander-in-Chief of Home Fleet, is absolutely convinced that at some point the Scharnhorst is going to venture out.
Right.
Because it has ventured out.
Yeah.
In September, not least.
Yeah.
And so every time they're just waiting for it to happen. And I don't think there's ultra decrypts or anything like that, but they are getting intelligence to suggest that this is about to happen.
Right. Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? So there's they you know, you talk about the sort of the sheer number of ships that the Navy have brought with them, that there's an element in which they're going hunting. They're
absolutely
very much.
Well, Force One is part of the protection. And so this is the 10th Cruiser Squadron. This is Vice Admiral Burnett, who is on the Belfast, and their idea is to their briefing is to cover the area of the Barents Sea south of Bear Island, this crucial kind of 300 mile stretch between Bear Island and the north of Norway, and then Force Two is based in Iceland and is going to be covering that other area, and they want to do that at the same time as the other convoy is coming back in return.
Because it
RA 55A, which is going back from RK.
Because the way things play out, as people will see, it does feel like a trap, baldly, for the Scharnhorst.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
And I mean, you know, obviously, again, we'll talk about it with Big Week. If you're in a B-17 that's been shot down, winning or losing that encounter is academic to you, isn't it? So this, so if you're one of these convoy ships, do you know your bait when suddenly a giant chunk of the Royal Home Fleet turns up to defend you? I mean, you know what I mean, Jim. It's this sort of, you need to destroy. Obviously, one of the things the Royal Navy in its tradition is aggression, isn't it? Seek out and destroy the enemy. And this is a
ABC,
perfect
ABC at the end of Tunisia and all that stuff.
Exactly, and this is a perfect example of it, isn't it? Essentially, really.
Yeah.
And the commander of the Home Fleet, that Fraser is on board, and he is a Navy man. You know, he is.
Oh, Fraser is just an absolute, what a legend! I mean, he's an amazing. Let's just quickly just give him a quick bio of him.
I wanted to make sure we did, because I was away on holiday when you sent me the notes for this, I thought, oh, Jim's taken a shine to Admiral Sir Bruce Fraser.
What a ledge.
Though, you know, Brooke didn't rate him.
Although
Brooke doesn't rate anyone when you read his diaries.
Brooke's judgment is not... we need to do a whole program on Brooke at some point. But you know, he was a brilliant chief of the Imperial General Staff. But the idea that he's being critical of someone like Fraser, who is a fighting sea dog to his absolute heart. He's also a progressive. I mean, the interesting thing about Fraser is he's done the usual thing. Is he's kind of, you know, worked his way up from the bottom. He's a naval cadet in 1902, serves in the Mediterranean Fleet, then the Home Fleet, then the School of Gunnery, which is HMS Excellent. And it's one of these sort of naval things where you have an HMS, but it's not actually a ship. Yeah. It's a land-based thing. Naval gunnery is absolutely his thing. He's involved in the naval gunnery on
Gallipoli.
But the key thing, I think, really is that although he continues doing this gunnery course, he then becomes Third Sea Lord before the Second World War. And during that time, he is absolutely at the heart of the Navy's innovation and modernising.
Yeah.
And he is very much a modernizer. He's a forward thinking. He's absolutely, all his men just absolutely love him. Got that perfect combination of bonhomie, decisiveness, imperturbability, twinkly eyes and crow's feet, you know, and all the rest of it. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's really famous in Britain. You know, he's like ABC, you know, he's like Admiral Cunningham. He's like, you know, he's not quite Monty levels, but I mean, you know, and this is one of the things I think people forget, is that these admirals, because of the store with which the Royal Navy is held within British culture, absolutely is the senior service. That these guys who are at the top of the tree, they are absolutely household names.
Yeah.
And it's just that retrospectively, we've it's all about the land campaign and the Battle of Britain and Bomber Command. We forget about the Navy. But he absolutely is the daddy man. And later on, he goes on to be the commander of the Pacific Fleet, which is the largest naval force that the Royal Navy ever mounts. So,
Yeah.
He's pretty serious. And he's someone whose judgment, you'd absolutely follow him into battle. You would be honoured to be serving under him.
And arguably, he's given himself this battle to fight. What he's not going to do.
And if you do that, you've got to answer the question, haven't you?
Well, what he's not going to do, and I think this is because after all, PQ-17 goes wrong because the Admiralty back in London tells them to disperse. That's not going to happen on this convoy, is it? That sort of thing. That kind of essentially sending, it's not going to get passed back up the tree, is it, as to what to do next. He's going to be there. He's going to be present. He's going to be in the battle and he's going to direct the battle the way he wants
and
it
he
fought.
He absolutely does direct the battle.
And yes, exactly. And that's exactly
on the crucial day, Boxing Day, 26th of December, 1943, he is absolutely 100% running the show.
Right. So let's get going. Monday the 20th, 1500 hours. Which after all, in Lockyer, it's dark. Let's it's twilight.
We're only doing 24-hour clock, aren't we, on this one?
Yes. 1500 hours. Convoy weighs anchor, sets sail from Lockyer. Once clear of the defence boom, moves into two columns to sail through the narrow passage of the North. Then North Minch. 1900 hours. Force one, the 10th Cruiser Squadron at the Kola Inlet. The conference.
Already in. In Russia.
And that there's a conference on Belfast. You know what? It's actually great to have a story where HMS Belfast, which is
a
tourist attraction, plays an absolute starring role. They meet the officers of Force One there and the escorts of RA-55A, which is the outgoing convoy.
So it's going backwards, the empty convoy,
boats going home. They finish 3 hours later. They finish an hour later and they disperse ready for sailing. So that surely is a, right, you chaps, you know what we're going to do. We're going to be heading out and bearing XYZ. We'll be met.
But there's a heck of a lot of coordination because you've got Force 2, i.e. Duke of York, Bruce Fraser and co., coming from Iceland.
But Jim,
so they're in the west.
You've got Force
One coming from Russia. You've got two convoys. You've got all the coming. One thing I should just correct myself actually, because I said that it's a 36th destroyer is escort. 36th destroyer flotilla is a fighting destroyer escort for RA-55A. It is the 17th destroyer flotilla, which is accompanying JW-55B.
Right,
and that includes another friend of the show, HMCS Hyder, which was the tribal class we were talking about.
I mean, the thing is, though, for all this complexity, that conference is only an hour. So these people know what they're doing, right?
That's a fair point.
Well, no, because I'm struck by that. I was struck by that when we, HX-231, is that the fact is a lot of this is happening pretty quickly, which suggests, they're not up till 4 in the morning going, bloody hell, what do we do?
Toying over their charts.
No, there's none of that. It's an hour. They know, here's the plan, chaps, is what we're aiming to do. The following day,
they know what they're about.
But that's a big part of this story. And you could argue that, if there's one part of the British Armed Forces where mission command exists, it's the Royal Navy.
That's such a good point. I've not thought about that before.
Captains know what to do. They go to their ships. They know what to do. It really relies on that, actually, to work.
Because you're out at sea, aren't you? I mean,
Gretton, the captain that doesn't rate. It's because he thinks he can't trust him. He can't say to him
to make his own decisions and use his initiative.
An hour long conference for a thing this complex. That's mission commander work. Okay, chaps, you know what to do. It's what that is. Mm. Once they've done the small talk and smoked the cigarettes and had their rum ration or whatever. So the following morning, 0800 hours, it's still dark. JW-50, because I think we've got to really think about the amount of daylight available. That's midwinter, 21st of December. That's the shortest day of the year. JW-55B form up into a cruising position of six columns in line abreast, having passed through the Minches overnight. So they're moving at nine and a half knots.
The estimate for the whole convoy is 9 knots. And it's interesting because when you talk about kind of, six columns, I mean, don't remember, there were 14 columns, weren't there, in HX-231?
Yeah.
231.
Yeah.
And there's six, but you know, a third of the number of vessels. So there's row one is three, rows two and four are four.
Yep.
3-3-2. That size on. And then, I mean, because when you look at the pattern of it and you compare that again to HX-231, oh my God. I mean, you know, it's absolutely surrounded by escort vessels in a way that the Atlantic convoy just is not.
It's quite extraordinary, actually.
It is so.
I mean, interestingly, you sent some maps over. It sort of looks like a Union Jack in a peculiar way. With the convoy in the very centre, and then diagonals out with Whitehall top left, Wrestler top right, Scourge top left, Iroquois bottom right, and then sort of on the internal diagonals. And they're 8,000 yards out. Then you've got Onslow, Honeysuckle, Gleaner, Hyder, Huron, and Oxlip and Orwell in an internal sort of circle around it. It's very interesting. And what you've not got there is the escort rushing from one end of the convoy to the other.
And you can afford to send them off on sweeps of kind of sort of 10, 15 miles. And you've still got enough to protect the
coverage escort to work as well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the destroyer escort for JW-55B arrives at Skellefjord in the Faroes at 9 o'clock in the morning. At 4 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, and it's dark at 4 o'clock, of course, at this part of the world, they're drilling in manoeuvres. So,
I mean, that in itself is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. Exactly.
Yeah, so they're still training while they're doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, practice. It's practicing rather. I think practicing
practice
is
rather than train.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll also be so that you can have a look at how good they are at it for when the moment comes. So you know which ship might be slowest to turn. You know which captain might be which captain might be merchant vessel might be the slowest to respond to orders. You've played the scales on the piano before the concert. You know, it is what it is.
You've gone for your arpeggios or whatever.
But
the other interesting thing about Arctic convoys is because you can't, you know, if anyone ends up in the water, you can't stay there for very long. You know, in the water it's 3 minutes, but on a raft it's like sort of 20 or half an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
So they have a pickup vessel, whose job is just to pick up people that
scoot about,
get sunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've also got a tanker with you to fill everyone up.
Yes, that's really interesting, isn't it?
Which you don't have in a transatlantic convoy.
Which you don't have, right.
So Wednesday the 22nd of December.
Wednesday the 22nd, so 0920, where there'll be a bit of light about. HMS Hydro, which has some engine issues, catches up. So engine issues again, the thing, part of the friction that comes with just trying to run a convoy. Catches up with the other escorts. Whitehall then goes and refuels British Statesman, which is the tanker. 10:30.
Whitehall is a destroyer in the through escort, I should add.
Yeah, at 10:30, a flying boat, Sunderland, signals from HMS Hound and then is given the position of the convoy. So the air cover is told where they are.
So everything can coordinate, because you can say you're going to be in this point, but you've got to actually be there.
There's
variations.
At 10:59, HMS Gleaner spots a Dornier 217. Yep. And I think
Gleaner is a minesweeper on the through escort. Yep.
This is really, really interesting, the German reaction here. This speaks to something else that's going on in the Allied attitude to the war.
Yep.
The Dornier reports citing 40 troop transports to Flag Officer North, Admiral Otto Schneewind.
I think I've got the I and the E the wrong way around.
Have you got that right? Schneivind.
Yeah, Schneivind.
Very good. Schneivind.
Such a great name.
Who thinks there's a raid on Norway, that must be imminent. They don't think it's a convoy. They think it's the invasion of Norway, basically.
But why do they think it's a 40 transports? Is because they can see 40 vessels. Why can you see 40 vessels? Because there's all the flipping escorts with it.
Yeah, exactly. So they order you. He orders Schneivind, then orders seven U-boats from Gruppe Eisenbert, which are off Bear Island.
So this is a wolf pack, effectively, isn't it?
Yeah, sends them off to go and have a look at this raiding party. And this is all part of Cascade, isn't it? And the deception efforts.
Yes. Yes, it is. But the interesting thing is Gruppe Eisenbert is exactly where it needs to be, which is just south of Bear Island, because the convoy goes pretty much scoots just to the south of it. You want to get as far away of, you can't go north of Bear Island, but you don't want to be, you want to be as far from a convoy point of view, you want to be as far away from Altenfjord and the North Norwegian coast as you possibly can. And what they do is go in the opposite direction, because they head towards Norway to patrol the coastline rather than staying where they should be.
Yeah.
So this is a this is a big mistake already.
Yeah. But interesting that its motivation is that they think because Hitler, one of the reasons Hitler, well, the other reason that Hitler's moved the Scharnhorst north in the first place in February 42 is because he's worried about a possible invasion of Norway. He's just got this thing in his head that that's what's going to happen. Midday, the weather starts to fall apart. There's a four or five coming from south southeast.
I mean, that's nothing. I was in a Klepper boat in that.
Well, yeah, I know you were, Jim, and and I think the medal got lost in the post. I'm sure I sent you one.
okay, so it says sea now 43. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know what 43 on the sea is. Is that
If you do know, write in and tell us. 12:25, the Sunderland closes on the destroyer escorts. So they've got air. They've got someone spotting in the air. The destroyer escorts spot the convoy 24 miles away. Whitehall can't detach itself from British statesmen. So Ressler, which is coming in to refuel, is unable to. This is at past 12. At quarter past one, the Sunderland spots the destroyer flotilla, reports it to the local escort. So it's all, they're all joining up. Everyone knows where everyone else is. HMS
By 1500, 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
The 17th Destroyer Flotilla, which is the fighting destroyer escort under command of Captain James McCoy, they've reached a convoy and they've formed up around it. So the local escort then detaches, goes back home. Yeah. And at 1700, the Sunderland turns for home as well. I mean, wow, that's a long trip, isn't it? Just circling around in the North Sea.
In the cold and in crappy weather. I mean, those crews. I mean, all of the crews in this. I mean, It's a huge endurance test. Not unlike this series of podcasts. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back with Thursday, the 23rd of December. We promise we will get to dawn on Boxing Day before the Battle of the North Cape in our next episode. See you in a tick.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost 3 decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school? Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii. Okay. And I looked at him. I said, you're done. I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching Stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to We Have Ways of Making You Talk. It's Thursday, the 23rd of December, 1943. James Holland and I, we're in a conning tower somewhere, our hands gripping the binoculars through the cold.
Yep.
I mean, this is the kind of weather,
if you,
If you take your glove off and you touch the metalwork, it'll take the skin off your hand. It's that cold, isn't it? At 0100, Force One leaves the Kola Inlet and heads to patrol south at the area south of Bear Island. At first light, Wrestler is sent in to refuel because after it couldn't refuel yesterday. Catalina joins the convoy, due to join the convoy at 9:15 from 18 Group Recce. 20 to 12, HMS Orwell spots two Dornier DO-217s. And one of the things when you were talking about the Luftwaffe and how the Luftwaffe has to be everywhere, their aircraft have to be capable of flying in all sorts of climes, don't they? Because they're always moving from, they're going one minute they're in the desert, the next minute they're in Norway.
Yeah, I guess maybe not Dornier 217s, which are seaplanes, aren't they?
Yeah, oh yes, of course they are, yeah. But you know what I mean? There is that sort of strange requirement of, you know, that Sunderland.
Ice and deserts, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Hyder and Iroquois open fire on the Dorniers. But claim to have hit them, but they carry on shadowing them. So the Luftwaffe are in the picture here quite decidedly, aren't they? Catalina arrives late at around about the same time that Wrestler casts off from the convoy.
From the tanker, and, yeah.
Yeah, from the tanker. It's ticking over still at this point. The Germans have spotted them. The Germans think there's something else. They changed their minds because by this time the Germans have realised it's not a raid on Norway, it's a convoy. Mm-hmm. Fraser holds a conference on board the Duke of York in Iceland. And he's convinced that Scharnhorst is going to sortie out of Altenfjord.
He's at fever pitch. I mean, you know, he's just, yeah. You know, this is, he's absolutely convinced, and he's just taught with the potential of what this could mean.
Yeah. They've been forced to have been together for more than a fortnight. So everyone knows everyone. He's insisting on exercises. He's insisting on practice. And the big idea is that they're going to illuminate the battlecruiser with a star shell and open fire on it at a range of 12,000 yards. So to close on it. So well within range of the Scharnhorst's guns. So that's quite interesting,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so 12,000 yards is 6 and a bit miles, isn't it?
Pretty close in the grand scheme of things. And then the idea is that the four destroyers from Force 2 would form subdivisions and leave the battleship and the cruiser Jamaica to then torpedo attack the Scharnhorst. So the idea is to preoccupy the Scharnhorst with gunfire, very threatening, heavy gunfire, and then send in the destroyers to kill it with torpedoes.
And the idea is also is the reason of, so these destroyers work in teams of four, and the idea is to have them in subdivisions of two. And the idea is that while two are attacking from one side, say port, the other two are manoeuvring to attack from the starboard, so that you're hammering them every which way, and the Scharnhorst doesn't know where to look.
And what you do is you use a combination of different size ships and different arms to basically sort of confound the Scharnhorst and not.
Yes, I'm also thinking about this. I mean, an appropriate analogy is probably kind of bullfighting, where you have the guy sort of going in with the spears to start off with, to kind of weaken the bull and get it to expend its energy.
Make it
and
angry.
Then you have the matador who then comes and delivers the kind of coup de grace.
Yeah.
And it's kind of it's sort of a bit like that, really. That you've
although
got
the matador,
different-
although the matador in this instance is a sort of dowdy destroyer, it's not a great big flash battleship. And it's quite interesting that I think that's quite interesting, isn't it? Is that the what he's talking about here is a combined arms approach rather than and then at the end the Duke of York will sink their battleship. He doesn't care. There's no sort of big ship ego in this approach, is there? That it's about a combination. It's about, and obviously this is the thing the Royal Navy can do because the Royal, after all, we've talked about this. The Royal Navy, the Scharnhorst is hopelessly outnumbered in this situation, and the German battle group is hopelessly outclassed. Actually, it's still very, very dangerous because the Scharnhorst is such a dangerous ship.
So they sail from Akureyri in Iceland at 2300, and what's really interesting is until Force One turns up, which is the 10th Cruiser Squadron under Burnett, and until Force 2 come on, which Burnett's authority will be superseded by Fraser's, Admiral Fraser. It is Captain James McCoy, who is a captain, who is in charge of protecting the convoy up until that point. You know, so he is calling all the shots. So at 2000, for example, that day, you know, he orders a 20-degree wheel to try and shake the shadowing aircraft. I mean, as it happens, it doesn't work, but he is making local decisions and command decisions until his superiors turn up.
That's mission command,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah, completely. I was sort of saying it to kind of prove your point, really.
Yeah.
I thought it was such an interesting point because I hadn't really thought about it like that before, but I think you're absolutely bang on.
Friday, the 24th of December, so Christmas Eve at 0100 hours, the convoy JW55B. I mean, please. I mean, could someone time machine that convoy a good code name? Could someone... I mean, some people might go back in time and kill Hitler, but I'm going to go back in time and give and convoy... Just that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to call it, you know, Thunder Flash or something. So it's got a cool name.
Yeah.
It's on course of 037 degrees at 9
Blue
knots.
Blue steel.
There you go. Loaded warrior or something. So Force 2 are still carrying on exercises in the early hours using Jamaica as a dummy target. Now, what's HMS Jamaica, Jim? Is that a battleship?
It's a cruiser.
It's a cruiser.
Big old cruiser. You know, absolutely, again, bristling with gunnery.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a Belfast side ship. I mean, again, this is it is a very, very, very substantial
and powerful
warship.
Bit of kit. Yeah. Yeah. If we call it a warship, then it can be anything, can't it? I hadn't thought of that.
It can be anything,
Force 2 is doing these exercises. He's using Jamaica as a dummy target. At 0700, JW55B alters course to 057 degrees, as the convoy sailing instructions say.
And I know this is completely obvious, but it is just worth talking about because there's a lot of degrees in where you are. So if you think of north being 12, you know, north being 360 stroke 000, east is 090, 90 degrees, south is 180, west is 270. So 057 means you're going in a kind of a northeasterly direction. Yeah, so I'm looking at it in the opposite direction.
I know, that's the problem, isn't it?
But yes, exactly. So that's always a thing. Just always think of the kind of, you know, the clock yeah, face.
Exactly. The columns are a bit scattered around about at dawn, but you know, these are difficult. These are challenging seas, as we've
unbelievably challenging seas.
11:30,
huge swell, crashing waves, all that kind of stuff.
11:30, the convoy commodore reduces the speed of the convoy so everyone can form up into normal positions. Close up. Hyder then comes in and takes on fuel from British Statesman. So what's happening is the refueling is just ongoing. They're making, and it's the, you know, it's the Royal Navy thing. If you can have a full tank of gas, then you've got the opportunity, you take it. At 1200 hours, the convoy is 400 miles from Altenfjord, which is where they're closing in on the Norwegian coast. 1225, Iroquois reports two aircraft shadowing the convoy from astern, and they're also sighted by two other vessels in the convoy. But Force 1 and 2 are not yet in place to give close support. I think that in itself is really, really interesting, isn't it? It's that there's a period here of opportunity for the Kriegsmarine. Certainly, if they were doing a good job, there's a chance here for the U-boats to, if they were in the right place,
I mean, why isn't the Scharnhorst called out of Altenfjord now? Because it's 400 miles from Altenfjord. So if you think Altenfjord is, you know, if you think of Bear Island at 12 o'clock, you've got...
It's a different clock, by the way, everyone, to the one we were just asking you to use. But yeah,
okay, forget that. I'm just confusing you. But my point is the convoy is going in a northeasterly fashion.
Yeah,
and Altenfjord is to the east, so you have to converge. So although it's 400 miles away, by the time that Scharnhorst got out and actually met the convoy, it probably only about 250 miles.
Yeah. And the Scharnhorst is very, very, very quick in a way that the convoy is slow. Fraser then, it's very interesting, 25 past one, Fraser decides to break radio silence because he's obviously thinking, what if the Scharnhorst comes out now? He's considered the thing, exact thing we're just talking about right now. Decides to break radio silence and orders the convoy to reverse course for 3 hours so that
basically
he can
turn around.
Yeah, turn around so that he can catch up.
Do a massive great big circle just to sort of kill some time.
Exactly. And so that he can catch up and he speeds up Force 2 because he thinks things need to coincide sooner than they were planning on having them happen. And that must be because of exactly what you're just saying. Why doesn't the Scharnhorst deploy now? And maybe he's thinking it will deploy or has deployed. Because after all, the thing to remember about the Channel Dash is that the Scharnhorst is at sea for 12 hours before anyone spots it. Gets halfway up the channel as a result. Time, even though things only doing, I don't know, what we would think of as 40 miles an hour, time is absolutely of the essence when you've got these converging ships and the strait that they have to get through is so narrow. So
the other thing that's really interesting is that Fraser sends a radio signal at 1325, but it's not until you know, half past a bit later that signal comes through, because it's sent in code and it's sent in Morse, and it's got to be kind of translated and then handed and dispersed, and people got to respond to it. Yeah. So actually, at the same time that he's sending out, or just after that, McCoy, who is the
has decided to take a measure anyway.
He's taken a measure anyway, which is to reduce the speed.
Yeah. Yeah, rather than turn around, he thinks that's going to be too difficult in the sea, and it's going to...
Well, to start off, he doesn't know that, so he's already told them to slow down. So actually, they're not as far as Fraser thinks they are.
Yeah.
So when he gets the signal, and this is absolutely proves your point, he overrules the Commander-in-Chief Home Fleet's decision, because he can see what Fraser's trying to do, but he's already dealt with that eventuality.
He's already anticipated it. Yeah, I'm starting to think that I've actually had my first original thought of 2024 there, Jim.
I think you're absolutely bang on. It's amazing. And the point is that is considered absolutely no one would question this, because he's the man on the ground.
Unless it went
wrong.
And
he's trained to make that kind of thinking. It doesn't go wrong in the Royal Navy.
No, of course, nothing goes wrong in the Royal Navy, oh boy. 1800, McCoy lets SBNO... What's SBNO North Russia, Jim?
Well, I think that must be senior British naval officer.
Right. He's let them know that they've been shadowed all day, basically, from 1220 to 1626, which is kind of... That's from the midday till the light runs out. Force One has steamed southerly on its flank... now turns north at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yes, yeah, so you've got RA-55A, which is the empty one going back towards Britain, and that is as far north as it possibly can be, but whilst at the same time going south of Bear Island. So you've got JW-55B, which is the outbound convoy going to Russia. That is coming in south, the homebound convoy, and you've got Force One on the flank of RA-55A protecting it. On the flank.
And then there's a false alarm at 7:30 that evening. So clearly, Honeysuckle fires two star shells. And as we said earlier on, what Fraser wants is you fire the star shells, you close with the enemy, you trap it in your...
And what type of ship is Honeysuckle?
That's one of those flag-class destroyers like HMS Snowflake, Jim.
Corvette,
yeah,
yes.
It's a Corvette, yeah. But that's great, isn't it? HMS Snowflake has joined us in spirit. That's a fantastic thing.
And we've got to Christmas Day.
The North Atlantic is not a safe space, but that's quite interesting, because they are worried that obviously everyone's jumpy and thinking, well, not jumpy, but everyone's thinking, Janos going to turn up any minute.
Everyone's alert, aren't they? Everyone is sort of, you know, it's like one of those spaniels, isn't it? That's sort of itching to go chasing after a pheasant. You know, it knows it's around.
Exactly. Merry Christmas, Saturday, 25th of December, Christmas Day. I imagine they did have Christmas pudding.
They probably had a separate single for that.
In the galley, yeah.
Ah, that's the Christmas pud signal.
So they're still altering course and zigzagging and stuff in the early hours. And Fraser realizes that the convoy is behind schedule and won't. So the incoming convoy, so JW-55B, the one going to Russia, is behind schedule and will not cross the outgoing, the empty ship, RW-55, on schedule. The outgoing, the empty ship convoy is not going to have the heavy cover that they're packing. So he asks it to divert north to get out of his light, doesn't he?
Get out of the way. Get out of safety because RW-55A, the empty convoy, is going to be well to the north of JW-55B. And although it's always going to have plenty of escorts around it to deal with U-boats, it is now safe from potential naval action
from the Germans.
Ship ones. You know, so the only possible threat to RW-55A, the homebound convoy, is from U-boats. But Fraser recognises that any U-boats that are around are going to be on JW-55B, the outbound convoy.
2 days ago, it was a raiding party attacking Norway. So,
and he also orders the senior officer in charge of the destroyer escort to detach four destroyers to help JW-55B. And that is the 36th Division. And so of those eight destroyers supporting RW-55A, four are chosen. These are those S-class.
And the idea of that...
No, they're from 36th Division. I got that wrong. It's from 36th Division.
And the idea of that is that if Scharnhorst does turn up, Force 1 has been reinforced, essentially, and should be able to handle it, even if Force 2 doesn't get turn up, even if he doesn't get there, basically.
Exactly.
So Musketeer, Matchless, Opportune, and Virago head off from... The thing is, U-boats anyway will be going very, very slowly won't they? So RW55A is pretty safe, really, from the U-boats that we know about anyway.
Yes, exactly. Because we already know that they're further south.
0901, U-601, spots convoy JW55B. But what we don't have is one of those great big Wolfpack pickets like we had with HX-231. At 10:04, Whitehall picks up U-601 on Huffduff. So U-601 has had an entertaining hour of watching the convoy and minding its own business, and then an escort destroyer spots it. So, you know, if you're in that U-boat, the shit could hit the fan at any moment. 11:15, Iroquois spots a German aircraft shadowing. 11:35, Whitehall gets another Huffduff, gets a further U-boat bearing. And the weather, it's interesting in these notes, weather atrocious. I mean, that could mean absolutely anything, couldn't it? I mean, 4, 6,
yes,
7.
Yes, I suppose what it means is it's consistently bad, but it's peak bad at these moments, you know, where the wind just whips up more. It's kind of a bigger swell. It's harder to kind of manage your, but you know, you've got a tough job managing the vessels in your, that are trying to sort of make their way across the sea.
Yeah, yeah.
Without then having to deal with the enemy as well.
The Luftwaffe can't get in the sky. So that the air gap is open, as it were. At midday, the convoy alters course to 075 degrees. So on your clock, it's, you know, that's kind of 2 o'clock, isn't it? On your clock face, isn't it?
075 degrees. I guess so, a bit more than that, but
that kind of neck of the woods. Well, if 3 o'clock's 90, U-601 is moving up the port side of the convoy. So U-601,
that's the south side.
Maintaining contact with the convoy. 12:15, the Kampfgruppe is ordered to 1 hour's notice. Finally, the Kampfgruppe is ordered to 1 hour's notice.
So this is the battle group north.
They're being ordered to 1 hour's notice by Konteradmiral Otto Kluber, who's the flag officer of the Kriegsmarine North. Kluber. Who's the flag officer of the Kriegsmarine North Norway. So things are beginning to... I mean, it's like the Germans are waking up, really. I think they've lost a day here, really, haven't they?
Completely. They've absolutely missed an opportunity because it's the previous day they work out that it's not going to be a... This is not a
raid.
An invasion force. You know, just get on with it.
Exactly. But for some reason,
The whole German USP in the war is about being decisive and, you know, striking quick and hard.
And being inside the enemy's decision loop and all that.
Yes, it's stuff, yeah.
12:35, Orwell and Whitehall are ordered to sweep to the port side of the convoy to the depth of 10 miles. So that's where the U-601 is on the port side of the convoy. So that's very much a reaction to the presence of a U-boat, the known presence of U-boat. 12:55, 36th Division from R5A.
That's those four destroyers that we were talking about.
Who have abandoned the empty boats and are joining the main... you can think of it as the main convoy, I think, the one that's going...
This is absolutely, I mean, you've now got so many destroyers. They've now got 12 protective destroyers.
Yeah. Fraser's loading the dice.
The through escort.
Yeah. Fraser's loading the dice here. 12:58, Whitehall picks up Huffduff again, U-601 on Huffduff again. So they know about the U-boat on the port side of the convoy and they're running a sweep to deal with it. So U-601 is essentially being contained. 14:15, Operation Eastern Front.
Big moment.
Yeah. Ordered to start operations against the convoy. And this is from Dönitz himself to Admiral Schneiwind, told Konteradmiral Erik Bay, who after all is the super sub on this case, isn't he? Because
he's standing.
He's a stand-in.
You've got these 40 cadets on Charnhorse, and you've got a stand-in commander. It's not to say that Bay isn't very experienced. He is,
but he's,
and I think he was on the Channel Dash as well.
Yeah. Well, it's Ciliak's on the Channel Dash, isn't it? It's the guy running the
Channel
Dash.
But he's not in command. He's a commander of a destroyer flotilla.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and he's done well in Norway, isn't he? As well, he did well in the Norway campaign, which is interesting because the Kriegsmarine do badly. So Kampfgruppe 1, which is the Scharnhorst with 5 destroyers, and the Germans don't name their destroyers, which is, I think, terrible error. Z-59, Z-30. Z-33, Z-34, Z-55. I mean, they were not thinking of us 80 years later wanting to read out German names on a podcast. No. It's so
inconvenient. And Z obviously is Zerstörer.
That's right. 29.
The Zerstörer of Schneifind.
34. 38. How, I mean, it's interesting, though. Dönitz's orders say if certain conditions arose around the action, it could be broken off. And, you know, and not least if strong enemy naval forces appeared. So there's a, it's peculiar, isn't it? That the orders are sort of, aren't the usual, like, close with the enemy and fight to the last shell, which is the usual sort of.
None of that.
None of that, which I think is quite, which I think,
because he doesn't want Scharnhorst to be lost, does he?
Exactly, exactly. You know, there's nothing to be gained in losing Scharnhorst, but also nothing to be gained in not trying to encounter the convoy. 1420 U601 is still saying that JW55B is in. You know, he's reporting further sightings and positions,
but at the same time, Schneifint is definitely smelling a rat.
Yeah,
weather's dreadful. He's, you know, he hasn't got his first choice commander. He's got his 40 cadets on the Scharnhorst. You know, it's hardly, it's the middle of December. It's the end of December. It's Christmas Day almost.
It's Christmas Day.
And he asked Dönitz for a postponement, and Dönitz says, no, pull your finger out and get on with it.
Which is interesting. So pull your finger, get on with it. But the orders are fairly qualified. So if it doesn't work out, come back. So you know. I mean, you'd be tempted, wouldn't you, to sail out and go, oh dear, it's terrible weather, and come back straight back, wouldn't you? But I suppose...
Well, so they go out and they get on with it. And he sails at 1900 hours from Altenfjord. And this is, you know, it's a delay caused by the time it took him to move his flag and staff of 30 men from the Tirpitz to the Scharnhorst.
Yeah, and does his conference on
conference on board first?
On the Tirpitz first. I mean, it's all
that's where Bay is.
Yeah, but they don't sound very prepared, do they?
Not at all. I mean, sorry, why hadn't he done this the day before?
You know, as soon as he. Anyway, it is odd, isn't it?
He doesn't, and this is when he leaves, and he leaves at 1900 hours, and Wolfpack and Eisenbart is now told to get on with it and start attacking the convoy.
Two days later. Yeah. I mean, it's very peculiar. It's a very sort of slack, isn't it? The convoy's meant to alter course at 8:30 that night, but Captain McCoy...
The conditions are so bad.
So bad. They decide it's just too difficult. It's going to risk the deck cargoes and risk collisions. So Captain McCoy, who's still running the convoy, says, nah, actually, you know what? We'll carry on until tomorrow morning, Boxing Day tomorrow morning. Kampfgruppe 1 is steaming north at 25 knots, so it's only a few hours.
So this is
a
Scharnhorst and his five destroyers. Yeah.
And the weather's really bad, so it's difficult. Difficult even for that small, because, I mean, you know, that's seven ships. It's not very many ships. They're having a problem keeping it together, as it were.
And the other thing that's absolutely clear is that Dönitz is completely watching this. You know, he is back at base, kind of following this with a fine tooth comb, isn't he?
But you would, wouldn't you? Because this is it.
You would.
This is your big asset. If it goes badly for the battleships will be cancelled. You know, there's a sort of future of the Kriegsmarine element to this battle, isn't there? That this is, and he's new in the job, so he doesn't want. Yeah, he's relatively new in the job. So he doesn't want to cock up, does he?
And so 2300, he sends a signal to Bay.
A convoy in Russia is sending materials to be used against our troops on the Eastern Front. We must come to their aid. Two. The troops, that is, not the convoy. orders themselves. Two, the convoy is to be attacked by the Scharnhorst and the destroyers. Three, the tactical situation must be exploited with skill and daring. The attack must not end in stalemate. Oh, God. I mean, imagine reading that. Every opportunity to attack must be seized using the Scharnhorst.
But, boss, you said I could go out if the situation...
Exactly. Every opportunity must be seized using the Scharnhorst superiority to the best advantage. The destroyers are to be used later. What?
When?
When? I mean, for what?
Why not in conjunction?
Why not do things in conjunction? Exactly. It's very, very weird, that order. Mm. Surely you're practiced in working together. And what we don't have here is the Scharnhorst leaving a day earlier and exercising for a day with the destroyers and
doing night exercises on his way. No, you don't. None of that.
You don't. You're just steam. Four, you may use your own judgment as to when to break off action. Oh, thanks, boss. You must disengage if a superior enemy is encountered, which surely the Luftwaffe, the U-boats at some point have said.
Yes, because how's it gone from 40 ships to kind of a convoy? Like, what do you think those 40 ships are?
There's a bloody great big battleship coming. You know, because he says
the Scharnhorst.
Well, yeah, the Scharnhorst superiority, which doesn't exist in this situation.
Then I love point five.
Inform all the crews accordingly. I have full confidence in your offensive spirit.
Which suggests that he doesn't have full confidence in his offensive spirit.
Of course. Of course.
So euphemism, don't think about being a wuss.
Yeah, I mean, all of it, though. A convoy, we must come to the aid. Well, must we? What if we're outgunned? That's order one. Convoy is to be attacked by the Shahnos of the Trust. Well, if you want. Then order three overrules order two. If the convoy is to be attacked by the Shahnos of the Destroyers, he then says, use the Shahnos superiority, the Destroyers to be used later. So one is three overrules two. Use your own judgment as to when to break off. You must disengage if a superior enemy is encountered, which essentially happens immediately.
And basically, Bay has read this, doesn't reply to it, but does apply to Schneifint to report that they're in the operational area, that the firepower of the destroyers was impaired, and the weather meant speed had to be reduced. In other words, this is not great conditions for us.
But do you think that's him going, hey, you can call this off anytime you like? Do you think that's him messaging Schneifint going, I'm in a fix here, right? I got this order from Dönitz. Is there any way?
Yes, I think that's
possibly
exactly what it is.
Is there any way possible we could
We could just go back to Altenfjord.
Is there any way we could possibly postpone? Is there any way we could do that?
Because otherwise, I've got a feeling by in 24 hours' time, I'm not going to be alive.
Exactly. So let's find out in our next episode, if in 24 hours he will be alive. We have successfully in this episode set the scene for Boxing Day 1942. The Battle of the North Cape. Join us for part three of this Titanic
exciting
tale,
culmination of this
of a Teutonic clash upon the waves. Exactly. See you soon. Cheerio.